Welcome to the Call to Obedience Radio Ministry. I'm Pastor Schulze. Today we want to go to the book of Acts, where we see the conversion of the Apostle Paul. This is the way it went. It says, "It came to pass that as I made my journey and was come nigh unto Damascus about noon, suddenly there shone from heaven a great light round about me." That's from Acts chapter 22. Now, that was Paul's story, and here today is my story, my Damascus Road experience. So it begins in Nazi Germany. Let me start with my mother. It was 1929 in Hamburg, the second largest city in Germany. Adolf Hitler, the leader of the Nazi Party, had not yet come to power, but his paramilitary troops were already marching down the beautiful boulevards of Hamburg, Berlin, and Munich under the banner of the swastika. Rudi, the son of a wealthy industrialist, had just proposed to my mother, Ilse. She immediately informed him of her Jewish ancestry, and Rudi responded that her lineage did not matter to him at all. But a few days later, under parental pressure, Rudi broke up the relationship. Despondently, Ilse made her way to jump off a canal bridge in our city, but an inner voice stopped her. Then she met Alfred, tall, blonde, blue-eyed. Before the relationship could go too far, my mother decided she would slowly and methodically inform Alfred of her Jewish background. When she finished, Alfred put his arms around her and said, "I always wanted to marry a Jewish woman." Ilse needed Alfred. The day after Alfred died at a young age, my mother found two loaded revolvers in his desk. Had the Nazis come to our door to get his Jewish family, it would have been over his dead body. Born in 1936, I was a third child, and that year all Germans were racially classified. First there were the Aryans, the pure Germans, such as my father. Then there were the pure Jews, such as my grandfather on my mother's side. And then there were the people of mixed race, the Mischlinge, mongrels, such as my mother and us children. I was the first one in our family that had a racial designation stamped upon his birth card. My mother was told by government officials that she no longer qualified for the monthly child support stipend that all other mothers received when they had newborns. I never heard the word Jesus come from my mother's lips. Yet after this first encounter with persecution, mother came home, opened her Bible, and wrote my name behind Psalm 91, verse 11, "For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways." That was August 16, 1936, shortly after my birth. Unbeknownst to her at the time, that verse became a prophetic force over my entire life. Soon Alfred was called to the Nazi Party office. He was told, "If you divorce your Jewish family, you will have a great future in the party." But my father chose to be loyal to his family, and the next day he was without a job. From now on, our family experienced harassment from a growing avalanche of anti-Semitic laws. On top of that, we began to be bombed by the British every night. Our family of six went from the fifth floor to the air raid shelter in the basement in total darkness, sometimes three times a night, until we were too worn out to go down anymore. All in all, we survived 1,000 bombing raids. Although we left Hamburg in 1943, I continued to be bombed in another 12 years in my dreams. Each night, I dreaded going to bed. I would dream that I was in a bunker, and a bomb would break through the roof, come through the fifth, the fourth, the third, the second, the first floor, all the way down to the ceiling of the basement, to hit me on the bridge of my nose. I would break out in cold sweat and wake up. Years later, I met Jesus. I was a college student at the University of Wisconsin, and one day I asked my Lord to stop the bombing. Christianity is supernatural. When the Nazis put pressure on my father the third time for a divorce, he knew that the next time they would not ask, but simply come with a van, possibly with the exhaust turned inward. So we made a quick move to East Germany to buy time, the first of five moves with just what we could carry in our hands. Shortly thereafter, Hamburg was attacked by over 900 bombers in a single night, called Operation Gomorrah by the British. The next day, 42,000 civilians lay dead in the rubble. Because of the Nazis' pressure on us, we were no longer in Hamburg. We were spared death by bombs. He will give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. I was born with a destiny. Soon the Germans retreated from Russia, and the Soviet army began to move into our country. When they took the first village called Niemersdorf, the little ones had their heads crushed, the old men were clubbed to death, all women from 8 to 80 were abused and nailed on barn doors and wagon wheels in crucifix fashion. These atrocities were broadcast on radio to inspire the Germans to fight harder, but the actual result was that within days, 12 million Germans became refugees fleeing ahead of the Soviet army. Before long, we joined them. The winter was cold, the snow was deep, and fear had struck the hearts of all. In fact, after the Soviets came to our town, they took the wounded soldiers from the hospital and ran their tanks over them. Now, three dreadful situations faced us. The Russians were coming, the Jews were being killed in our neighborhood, and Alfred, our father and protector, died of a combination of malnutrition and tuberculosis. The condition in our town was dismal, with hundreds of refugees starving or freezing to death in their open horse-drawn sleighs. 1,000 frozen, uniformed German soldiers were stacked like wood in our schoolyard. There was no place or time to bury them. We were 24 hours from the invasion. But the Germans kept a rail track open to evacuate a train of wounded soldiers. The mayor said on the radio, "We understand that everybody wants to get out, but we can only take a few refugees to stand between the rows of bunk beds on the train. All families where there are at least three children who are orphans or half orphans, or there is at least one infant, can get on the train. He shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways." Hallelujah. My young widowed mother, still unaccustomed to making decisions, asked us children as we gathered around her, "Shall we stay or shall we go?" With a single voice, we said, "Let's get out of here." Later, she wrote in her memoirs, "I took the voice of my children as the voice of God." The two-hour train ride to the Baltic Sea port, Danzig, now Gdansk, turned into a three-day, three-night, mostly standing ordeal. For 3 days, the train was shifting backwards and forwards as the Russians and Germans fought it out over the railroad track. There was no heat, no food, no water, no medical care, no sedatives for the wounded, but we had plenty of snow to eat. I stood 2 days next to a dead soldier before they laid him out in the snow. We reached Danzig and joined 2 million refugees in an ever-shrinking pocket with our backs to the Baltic Sea, while the Soviets were all around us moving towards Berlin. The German Navy tried to gather everything that floated to take these refugees to West Germany through the mine-infested sea. We got into a freighter and were asked to lie down body to body on the cold, steel-riveted floor. A minesweeper gently led us out of the harbor, and then we were on our own. Two Soviet submarines sank refugee ships. Altogether, 25,000 refugees and wounded soldiers went down in the ice-cold waters of the Baltic Sea. But fog, my friend, came in. God sent it, and the enemy could not find us. He shall give his angels charge over thee, to keep thee in all thy ways. The West German harbors were mined shut, so all the ships were diverted to Copenhagen, Denmark. There my baby sister died of starvation with another 1,000 little ones. They were buried 5 to a box under the banner of the swastika. Soon, 36,000 of us refugees found ourselves interned behind barbed wire for the next 2 years. There were 17 people assigned to our room. Some boys carved chess figures out of the tree branches, and we played chess 6 to 7 days a week. The second year, we started a full-fledged school system, including elementary school, high school, and university, although we had no textbooks, no notebooks, and no pencils. The first thing we had to learn, still under Hitler's school system, was a great German hymn, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." This was my first religious education. As I lay on my top bunk bed on a little bit of straw, I asked the question, who is God? Where is he? And what is this all about? I was like a little boy, Samuel, who heard a voice speaking, but could not discern what it was God was telling him. At 13 years of age, we were back in the rubble of Hamburg, which was 80% destroyed. One day I took my bicycle into the forest to escape the debris of the city. I had no tent. I had no blankets. So I covered myself with pine branches for the night. In the morning, ants were crawling up my legs, awakening me. A nightingale sang its beautiful morning song. The golden beams of the sun broke through the birch trees, and I heard a voice speaking to me in perfect German, saying, "Ich liebe dich, ich liebe dich, ich bin Liebe." I love you, I love you, I am love. This is the first time I ever heard someone say to me, "I love you." Well, I'm going to stop here, and we'll continue with my Damascus Road experience. Now, in closing, I want to tell you, if you want to hear this broadcast again, you can go to my website and just click the radio link, and you can hear that again and again. Or you can see my story also as you go to my website. So get paper, pencil ready. I give you my website address, and that is www.schultze. That's schultze.org. Once again, www.schultze, S-C-H-U-L, like in Lima, T-Z-N-E .org. Thank you for listening, and tune in again next week at the same time or the same station for my Damascus Road experience. Goodbye now, until then.